Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartzdropper. On today's show, who owns your data? Most Americans and people around the world who use the internet regularly are probably familiar at this point with the internet business model, where you get a service like Facebook or Google for free, but it's not really free because you are letting the company collect data about yourself and then you get ads targeted to you. And that's kind of how it works. But are there other models, and is there a way that you could actually make direct money getting cash for your data? My next guest says so. Joining me to discuss this is Matt Hogan, CEO of Dataku. Matt, thanks for joining the show.
Thanks for having me.
So Matt, tell us about the business model of your company before we jump into policy.
Yeah, absolutely. So the basic premise is all of us as individuals and consumers create a lot of data every day in the course of our normal daily actions. We create data on our phones, on our devices, on our laptops. We create data when we shop on our debit and credit card accounts. We create data on our social platforms, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Foursquare, et cetera. We create data on our browser with our daily browsing activities. Of course, that's a pretty hot button issue in terms of cookies and do not track, et cetera. And in large part, we don't, as consumers who are creators of this asset, and make no mistake, data is an asset. In large part, as consumers, we don't really partake in the economic value chain of this data in any sort of tangible, overt, direct, meaningful way. As you mentioned in the introduction to the podcast, there is some value, right? So I get on Facebook and they're providing me with this platform where I can see pictures and talk to my friends and do all sorts of stuff. And they get my data and 1.5 billion other people's data and build a $500 billion company. So that's fine. And we kind of, you know, tacitly make that exchange. But what we're trying to do is bring that data exchange above board, put it on the table, arm the consumer with their data, and allow them to transact with it as they see fit. And how that may look is, you know, a very kind of simple business case. You know, let's say we have a couple hundred thousand users and an investment firm wants to understand more about consumer purchasing habits across a cohort of men in East Coast from 25 to 30, right? They may be long a public equity that the main buying cohort is, as I said, male 25 to 30 coastal city, East Coast. So we can filter down to people in our user base and that fit that cohort or that segment, and we can transact on their behalf. They kind of give us agenting rights, right? Our user base does, and we can transact a data set, and then whatever the investment firm is willing to pay for that data set, we pass the earnings back through to all the people who were part of it. And that's a very simple use case for how the data transaction would work.
So a company comes to you, they want to know something about these 200,000 people, and what kind of information do I have to give up when I go to Dataku and I want to sign up and I'm like, okay, you know what? I want to do this thing. I want to sell my data for money, you know, get a direct value from the economic chain, as you said. What am I telling you about myself?
Sure. So the best way to think of it, there could be a number of different companies or entities that want to buy different data sets, right? So there could be a company like an investment firm who wants a large sample of people, and they want to understand the demographic information of these people, their spending histories, and that could be it, right? They just want to understand consumer purchase trends. So for you as a consumer, as a user signing up to Dataku, you would authorize, you'd fill out a basic demographic form, you would authorize your credit or debit card through a financial API, you know, just like mint.com would do. You can just sign in with your credentials. Then we can pull in on a read-only access, pull in your data, have it stored securely at Dataku, and then we can release it out in, you know, via API or through a file on an as-needed basis. So when you say, you know, what data do I have to give up, we don't necessarily think of it as giving up data. It's more collecting it all in one place, and then as different entities come in to purchase data, if you qualify, if you connected that data set, you can be part of that and you can release certain data. Another use case might be, we just recently implemented Fitbit's API, and your insurance company, there are plenty of insurance companies out there now who are giving discounts to on a one-to-one basis to their customers who are willing to share Fitbit data for a year. So for example, there was a pilot back in 2015, I think it was Liberty Mutual or maybe Hancock Insurance, that was offering the equivalent of a 10 or 15% discount on life insurance rates if they could track the Fitbit data of their policyholders for a year. And they rolled that out to maybe 10,000 piloters. And that's a different kind of data sale where the entity already has a pre-established relationship with you and you're injecting data into an already existing transaction. That transaction was you were paying $1,000 a year for your life insurance premium, and all of a sudden, if you permit your Fitbit data, you get to save $100 or $150 off of your policy. And that's a really interesting trade because it's identity linked, whereas something like 200,000 person aggregate pool of you know, purchases that are kind of randomized just by a basic demographic, there's no tie back to you. So the way we look at it, we're trying to offer many different ways for you to monetize your data, whether it's on a one-to-one basis, an aggregate basis, or anything in between.
And it spans a wide range of issues. So you brought up healthcare, and big data is always part of a discussion with healthcare because while there is concern, you know, you bring up insurance companies, there are people concerned that the more information an insurance company has about you, yes, you can get a discount if you're healthy, but you can also get penalized if you're not. So that's a major concern. But of course, it's always this balance and trade-offs. You know, how do we get the benefits of the $150 discount without discrimination or screwing over a bunch of people? You know, other than healthcare or just basic information, what other industries, you know, you mentioned finance, are there other applications, you know, for people with different interests, how they could, you know, make money off of their hobbies?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's use a retail use case. So let's say that we've got a browser extension. So it's basically what the browser extension provides for is data portability. I mean, once you connect your data at Dataku, we give you a browser extension. You can effectively go around the web with the extension enabled and then permit data on the fly. And the use case for that might be if you're at Gap.com, you have $500 worth of stuff in your shopping cart, and at the last mile before you confirm a transaction, Gap would love to know, like, where has Evan shopped in the last 60 days? Where has he gone to our competitors? Has he shopped at J. Crew?
I bet they'd like to know if I shopped at J. Crew.
Absolutely. What share of wallet do we have with this guy? And where is he going to go after? And if you have your data in one place and you can permit it, you have this new bargaining chip in the trend. You're about to pay $500 and Gap goes, listen, we'll give you a discount of $100 or 20% if you want to permit us to know where you shopped recently. That's a great poker chip for you to be able to play in a transaction that if you don't have your data and it's not portable with you, you can't do that.
So that gets to the issue of ownership and user empowerment, which is going to be a focus of policy around big data. And I don't necessarily take this view, but there are a lot of people who are concerned about, you know, especially in Europe, even though it's a transaction and I agree to terms and services to use websites like Facebook and Google and others, that there's not enough user empowerment, that it's kind of a black box. I don't know how the algorithm works. All I know is I need to use these services. That's an issue in Europe where they say, yes, you can go off the grid. You cannot use Google and Facebook, but then you can't really participate in society. So people are really powerless. Now, here's a different situation where I'm very happy with the services I get from those two companies in exchange for my data, but this is another way I can monetize my data. Should people be less concerned about big data when this trend emerges? I mean, is this something we can look forward to, more ways for people to be making money off their data? Is that where the internet business model is headed? And, you know, your company might be one of the first iterations, but then we can imagine in 10 years that it's much easier to make money. I mean, is this a reason for us to not freak out with the techno panic about, oh, these companies have so much data?
Yeah, I do think there's a direct link there. And, you know, we started this company in 2012. It was pre-Snowden, and there was very little awareness of how data was transacted, how deep in, you know, our data cookie jars these companies were that were tracking us via cookie and other means and other methods. And I think the story arc of, you know, the panic and you know, technophobia around data and this and that and people having access, there's always going to be kind of a big blip in kind of the radar early, and people freak out. And then all of a sudden you realize, well, if I'm going to be living in a wired world and I need these and I want to use these services and I want to go off the grid, well, how do I use this asset for my own benefit? Yeah, I'm granting via license my data to Facebook and Twitter and anybody else who's tracking me, but how can I also get a copy of it? How can I start to use it myself?
Right.
And I think that's the natural kind of progression of someone's mentality on this stuff, which is, you know, oh, I want to put up a wall or a garden. Then they go, well, if I put up a wall or a garden, that's like putting your money in a bank and never drawing on it and using it. Right. It's an asset that should be utilized, and people are coming around to that. And I do think we're, you know, an early iteration of the utility of data. You know, a perfect example of this is if I go to Starbucks and I swipe my debit or credit card. Starbucks has a POS system that is tied into their own database. Their database maybe is tied into a DMP, which for those out there, it's a data management platform that, you know, they may outsource or farm out some data. contract work with, and there's all sorts of pipes and interconnectivity and a lot of information that they glean and use that transaction in aggregate with other transactions that says, okay, that store is not doing well. Let's close down that retail site and then open a new one over here because we know that that store is doing well, et cetera. And then on the other end, when we swipe our debit card, that's what they get. When we swipe it, we get a little paper receipt that says, you know, I bought a cup of coffee for $3.25. There's not much to do with that. And the utility cases get me something that is, you know, digitally readable and data portable, and then I can start to use that data for different applications, right, across you know, any number of financial or economic verticals, and that's how I think people are beginning to think. And I know I sounded very technical in my description, and that's because I'm in this kind of in the weeds on this world. But people are, you know, from a top level 30,000 foot saying, you know, God, there's this great asset that I'm accumulating every day. How do I get more out of it?
Right. And is scalability an issue, though? I mean, with Facebook, part of the reason they get to offer a service that is used by over a billion people and everyone gets the same high quality experience is because of the massive scale, that my small amount of data might not be worth that much, but when coupled with 100 million people with similar, you know, characteristics to me or whatever, then it's worth a lot. So if we are talking about the individual and their relationship with their data and how they can sell it, are we always going to be talking small potatoes? I mean, how can a single person be worth that much to an advertiser? So, I mean, and not to say that's bad, but is it always going to be like, oh, this is a nice little side money? Kind of like when people answer surveys, right? Okay, oh, I got $10 last month answering surveys. That's cool, but it's not life-changing.
Right.
Or is it going to be more than just $5 here and there?
Yeah, I think it'll be way more. And we can go back to the use case that I brought up earlier, which is you're paying $1,000 a year for life insurance and they're willing to offer you a 10 or 15% discount. That's $100 or $150 that you, the last year before that, before you were using your data, you never had, right?
And it wasn't the direct transaction of the sale of the data. It was more that now that we know that you're healthy, it was a longer term trend. So is that the key?
Well, they'll give you the discount either way. To be honest with you, insurance companies are not even using that data to price premiums. They're not even close to that.
Okay.
And that's in the life insurance case. They're just going, we need to get our hands dirty with this data. We need to understand more. Let's offer out discounts to get people to take these actions so we can start to kind of mine the data and get some empiricals and understand more. But getting back to the question you asked me, that's one use case, right? So let's say you started at this year, January 1, you said, I'm going to start using my data, and you take that insurance deal. Now let's move down the line to your bank, and you're paying $10 or $20 for your checking account per month. And your bank says, listen, we'd love to know more about this guy. If we're going to extend him a loan, yeah, we have some pretty good financial data on him, but we don't know what his professional graph looks like. We don't know what his social graph looks like. We don't know who he's associated with. We would love to know those things. So if you're willing to share LinkedIn data, Facebook data, maybe search and browsing behavior, you know, across the board, that might help them, you know, with a large pilot of people, that might help them understand more about underwriting credit to you. And they may be willing to give you a discount on your checking fees for 6 months. And this is not something that I've concocted. These are live conversations we're having with potential partners that are on the table to be rolled out in the real world. So let's say you get 6 months of free checking. That's either $60 or $120 plus the $110 or $150 you made off of your insurance deal. And those are just two specific transactions, right? Let's say you take the Gap deal, right? You have $500 worth of stuff in your shopping cart. They give you a 20% discount to see where you shopped for your last 10 retail purchases. And you get $100 off there. Now you're up to about $300 on three simple transactions. So there's legitimate money at stake to be using this asset. I mean, I could talk to you for half an hour of all the different use cases. And then there's the aggregate anonymous sale to a market research firm or an investment firm and kind of annuitized dollar stream from that too. So I think there's major, major dollars at stake. And the best way to think about it is just advertising alone, they call the DDME, the data-driven marketing economy, is a $200 billion per year industry. And that doesn't even take into account the use cases I just mentioned before. That's just straight advertising, digital advertising, direct advertising. So there's major, major money at stake for us on an individual level and on an aggregate scale level to be using our data.
And we're in the baby stages of both the commercial internet, which is about 20 years old, and your company, which is 5 years old. And just the idea that you could individually sell data for money, that's not that new either. So, or that's not that old either. So, I mean, we really are in the baby stages. So, yeah, I might be skeptical now that people are going to get rich off of this. But of course, you know, who knows what this is going to look like in 10, 20 years. Now, of course, there are policy implications. I mean, answering the question, who owns your data? That's a tough one because I give data to Google. They use it. They sell it to advertisers. So do they own it? Do the advertisers own it? Do I own it? Do we all own a piece of it? Are we ever going to be able to actually answer that question in a definitive way. Do you own your data, or is it just a case-by-case basis?
Yeah, it's a great question and a really interesting topic. We tend in the U.S. we tend to think of ownership in terms of property rights and physical property rights. You know, I might be the only person in the world who's sitting in this particular chair. In fact, I am, right? Nobody else in the world is sitting in this chair that I'm sitting in. So I'm exerting some level of ownership over this particular physical good. When you think about data, let's use the Starbucks case. It exists in two places at once. So I swiped my card and bought that coffee for $3.25. They have a record of that transaction and I have a record of that transaction. So it's really hard to apply physical ownership framework to digital things that can exist in two places at once. So we try not to focus so much or even say the word ownership. We more focus on how can you utilize this asset that's been created, right? And it's okay that Starbucks has a copy of that transaction and can use it for better, more efficient business processes or to decide whether or not to open retail stores somewhere or how to better advertise to people. That's fine, right? I have agreed to buy their product, and part of that agreement is they get a copy of that transaction. But I can use that transaction too, because La Colombe Coffee might want to know that I was buying at Starbucks. And I need a tool. I need to be enabled to use that. So getting back to it, it's more about, as a key stakeholder of an asset, because we don't want to say an owner, it's imperative that we have a seat at the negotiating table and that we can discern benefit from this asset. If you think about other asset classes, cash, my home, my stock and bond portfolio, whatever, we have almost full agency, or we can, you know, outsource full agency at our discretion over those assets. Personal data is the only asset where we don't have a seat at the table and we discern very little benefit, at least over tangible and direct. And that's kind of the key piece. It's not so much about ownership. It's much more about getting a seat at the table.
You're in the business of convincing people to share information about themselves to benefit not just your company, but the individual and potentially the world, if we're talking about something like big data and health. When we think about the hurdles, though, you know, yes, people have shared all this data and we're in an amazing internet economy and there's all this innovation and job creation. But then you have things like Snowden, which is a setback because that discourages people from sharing data. And then there's a chilling effect on free speech. You follow policy debates in tech. What do you see as the biggest hurdle to people being more and more comfortable with this business model? Is it cybersecurity, just hacks? Is that what people care about? Is it just the creepy factor, like that people know stuff about me, the Internet of Things, where all these devices in my house are going to be collecting data about me, my Alexa, my smart fridge, and I can't be sure that the data is going to be secure? You know, your business theoretically thrives in an environment where people are open and honest and speak freely. What do you see as the biggest hurdle?
Yeah, so I think in the beginning part of your question, you know, you mentioned Snowden and the Snowden revelations, how that had kind of an effect on, you know, the mentality of people and sharing data. It was definitely a watershed event for us and for our industry and people thinking about utilization of data. I think we need to differentiate between government and commercial applications. And people, rightfully so, should be worried about government and their ability to monitor access our data or use it for purposes that we may or may not know about. And that is very different from the commercial application, which is you getting tangible benefit back to you, the person, right? So I think people are getting, that people realize that if they trust a brand or they shop at a certain place or they have a insurance policy with a certain company, they already have a pre-established relationship, and it's okay to say, if I can get more value out of that relationship if I permit this level of data, and I'm comfortable doing it because I know the guy on the other end, I know what he's using it for. Government is very different. We don't know what they're using it for. They're not offering us anything, you know, of tangible value.
Well, they would say our safety, of course, but the issue there is consent, right? So they might assume that everyone in America is willing to just give up their Fourth Amendment rights for safety. That's an assumption they made. That's not, and if it's a constitutional violation, that's not a conversation that was had. So yeah, even if the NSA would come back and say, okay, yeah, you're offering the benefit of a great service, we're offering the benefit of your life. First of all, prove that all of these surveillance tools are necessary to keep people safe. Prove that the constitutional violations are worth it. You know, there are always trade-offs. So that's really the issue. I, at least when I deal with a company like Google or a company like Dataku, I checked a box, and if I didn't read that contract, that's kind of on me. With the NSA, you don't have no idea what the hell's going on. You didn't consent to anything.
Right. There's no box to check, and more importantly, there's no competitor out there offering a better service because government has a monopoly. So,
The FBI competes with the NSA, which competes with the CIA. It's great.
Right, right. And they've all got a monopoly. So, on force and forcing us to do something. So I think the commercial application is different. It's like, if somebody thinks that we're not acting properly, they can go down the road to the next company that might look like Dataku, who has a different policy and says, hey, this is how we treat data. Come do it, come work with us. And the consumer can vote with their feet. And that's kind of the beauty of the commercial application. To answer the second part of your question, you asked, what are people caring about? What we found from our user base is people get over the hurdle when they get economic value. Any consumer, anybody in America speaks the language of transaction. I give this and I get that in return. And they can make that, very apples to apples comparison on what they're giving up and what they're getting. And they can say yes or no. And that's great. And you don't need to be thinking about the management of your data, a data specialist, a tech nerd, an early adopter. You don't need to be one of those people just to understand, if I give this up, I can get a discount on my insurance premiums. That's $150 saved. I know what's going out the door and I know I'm getting a return. And it's really amazing how zeroed in people are on the economic value. I think without providing, tangible economic value, there is a creepy factor being tracked around and this and that. But if you bring that transaction to the forefront and say, here's what you're getting in return, and then giving people the choice of saying, I do want to do this thing or I don't, that's the key. And that's kind of what we're trying to do.
You mentioned the phrase vote with your feet. And I think in this day and age in particular, it's fascinating the way that people use their purchasing power to express a political opinion. And the politicization of companies, and people look very closely at how companies respond to political developments. So you had controversy over Uber and Lyft and the Trump executive order on immigration, and just it's very important to people what companies do in particular. And with Dataku, yes, you can potentially get cash directly, but there's also a way that you can express your beliefs and things that you value. And that brings me to the partnership that we have with you. Because Tech Freedom is an organization that stands up for Fourth Amendment rights, free speech, permissionless innovation. These are values people care about, and we're a nonprofit that fights for those beliefs. And then there are other nonprofits that have partnered with Dataku. And is it pretty much the same with the service, but instead of you getting, $5-$10 or whatever it is, you can direct that to a charity? Tell people a little bit about Give with Data.
Yeah, sure. So you hit the nail on the head. It is very much the same transaction. So if you take the Dataku platform, the transaction is you permit your data to be sold. We go out there in the world and sell it and then bring you back the earnings from that. With Give with Data, instead of bringing you back the earnings, well, we still bring you back the earnings, but they say, hey, you can channel these earnings into any nonprofit or charity of your choice. You're creating value for a cause that you like. And you fully understand how the transaction works, why the data has value, what we're doing with it, et cetera. We had some signups after we launched our partnership. We had some signups. People came in and said, this is awesome. I get it. I want to permit data to this platform. And instead of pocketing the dollars myself, I'd like to push some dollars into Tech Freedom because I like these guys. I want to support them. And it's a way that I can utilize my data to further a cause that I enjoy and that I listen to on Podcast Weekly or that I, refer to when I'm talking about policy without having to dig into my own pockets. I use my data asset instead of using my money.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously there are some great groups on there, including the Electronic Frontier Foundation, an organization we work with on civil liberties. But of course, I'm going to implore you, if you like this podcast, go to givewithdata.com, sign up for Dataku and choose Tech Freedom. And we would love to have your donation, and that'd be the perfect way for you to express your appreciation for this podcast. But I want to thank Matt Hogan, CEO of Dataku, for coming on the show. This was a really interesting discussion, getting to the issue of who owns data in this digital world. But I look forward to speaking to you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is great.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Let us know what you think of the show. Send us an email at media@techfreedom.org. Feel free to pitch topics and guests or yourself as a guest. Go to givewithdata.com and we'll be mentioning that in future episodes. And choose Tech Freedom. You can help cover the cost of this podcast without even opening your wallet. Find this podcast in the iTunes store. Please leave us a review because we'll help others find the show. Thanks for listening.
Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.